I want to, first of all, acknowledge my co-authors. I see Amanda here. And by the way, at just before 8 o'clock, or about 8 this morning, several of us, including George and myself, were noting the high proportion of gray in this room. But I'm glad to see that it's the non-gray attendance has picked up quite a bit.
They don't get up better.
Yeah, the younger folks were, y'all were later coming in, but we... Glad to see some younger folks coming in here. Want to acknowledge Amanda Smith, Stanley Culpepper, and Philip Roberts' co-authorship and for their help on the paper. Briefly, just to touch on the situation and background that we have in Georgia, you can see the things listed here. A couple of things that I'll highlight that are kind of important here in the paper. Realize, first of all, that almost 100% of our crop in Georgia is planted to transgenic varieties. Over 80% of that is stacked Bolgard Roundup Ready. More importantly, over 80% of the crop in Georgia is one variety, Delta Pine 555BR. Now, I'm sure all of us in this room know that single gene BT technology is now a thing of the past, unless a farmer were fortunate enough to be able to purchase seed from remaining company stocks prior to the end of September. Otherwise, in 2010, farmers have got to move to either a non-BT cotton, a conventional or a straight Roundup or Flex, or got to move to a two-gene variety, which is either a wide stripe or a Bolgard 2. So we've got all this going on in terms of the technology and the availability of technology changing, and that's especially critical for us in Georgia because this one variety compromises so much of our acreage, comprises so much of our acreage. And you combine that with the fact that we have, as I'm sure some of you do in your states, we have a increasing problem with glyphosate resistance in Palmer amaranth or pigweed. And the problem started in 2004, and it's getting late. It's getting more spread each year as we go. So in terms of the paper, as producers look ahead to 2010 and also in the future, when they come to making choices about varieties and what to plant, two things have got to be foremost in their mind. Number one, you got to switch to two-gene technology now, or a non-BT. And secondly, in combination with that, you got to figure out how to manage the resistance problem with those newer technologies. We have not adopted the newer technologies like a W or a B2 or even a Roundup Flex very much. But as we get into 2010, now that 555 is essentially gone, we got to switch. And we got to do so considering the fact that resistance is also a problem. Well, here are the objectives in terms of the paper. I want to show you some trends in technology use in Georgia for the past few years, and also show you the extent of our situation or problem with glyphosate resistance. And then we're going to do some very simple budgeting techniques. We're going to look at the technology and herbicide options and the cost as we look ahead to 2010 and try to compare the different options out there for growers, both in terms of technology and weed control programs to control glyphosate resistance. I make one caveat in the box there. Please note that. I do use brand names here. I don't do that in any way to endorse or to say that these are UGA Extension recommendations. They are based on UGA Extension recommendations, but they're simply one example of a book that's about a quarter inch thick that's UGA recommendation. So there are all sorts of variations possible, and we use the ones I'm going to show you we think are typical in the sense that a lot of growers use something of this nature, but certainly they're not meant to represent all the possible programs out there, nor all the possible brand names and other problems and other products that are out there. Very quickly, this is a look at the technology distribution. You can see the major use of the Bolgard Roundup Ready, the BR technology there. And again, most of that is Delta Pine 555. You do see that the BR technology is most of the acreage in the state. One side note, you know, back in the mid to late 90s when the Roundup Ready technology first came along, growers in Georgia were slow to adopt or slow to accept Roundup Ready varieties because they were such low yielders. Whenever the BR, the stacked varieties, came along, and particularly when 555 came along, compared to Roundup Ready and the conventional varieties that we were still growing, the yield was so much better that we readily switched over to BR. But in essence, what growers were doing, they were paying the technology fees not only because of the utility of the technology, the Bolgard and the Roundup Ready, but essentially they were also buying pounds. Whether they needed the technology, the BR or not, it wasn't secondary, but it was not fully the reason why they switched over. They switched over because of much higher yield potential in those varieties compared to what had previously been available to them. This is a look at what was planted in the state this past year, and I know this is busy, and I apologize for that. What's the old rule? Never put more than about, you know, 50 words or something on a slide, but I've broken that rule. But I wanted to show you kind of what we had done this past year in Georgia. You see 83% BR, and again, you see most of that, almost 83% in 555. We did plant almost 8% of the Bolgard 2 and some of those, the new Delta Pine 09 varieties. You see some Stoneville and Fibermax in there as well. But we did plant almost 8% of the state in Bolgard 2. And then we had over 5%. If you take the WRF, the WR, and then the straight W, if you add all those together, you've got a little over 5% that went to wide strike, which is also a two-gene cotton. So in total, about 14% of the state this past year was planted to two-gene varieties. And we've been trying to encourage growers for a couple of years now because we knew this was coming, trying to encourage them to try the two-gene varieties on their farm on a small acreage and get used to the yield and the management practices that it takes to do those successfully. And they for the most part have done that, but they've still been reluctant to do so because of 555. But the day has come now where we've got to switch over to that. So 2010 will start a new day. This is a map showing the counties in Georgia that are confirmed to be infested with glyphosate-resistant palmer. We started out in Macon County in 2004. Right now we've spread to a total of 38 counties. We've got about 65 or 70 counties, most of them south of that line that you already see there, or a little bit north of there. But we've got about 65 or 70 counties in the state that grow cotton, and we've already got resistance confirmed in 38. And Stanley says that we'll likely have resistance confirmed in most, if not all, counties this year. We do actual lab tests for resistance at the end of each crop year. So this was based on what was out there at the end of 08. So we'll do this again the end of this crop of the 09 crop year, but we expect it to continue to spread. We did a survey back in 08 of county agents in these counties where resistance had been found, and we asked them to compare what they're doing now, what their farmers are doing now, versus what they were doing back in 04 prior to when we knew that resistance was there. A couple of things that I'll highlight here. You look at the acres treated with a DNA or a residual herbicide other than DNA, we're at 90% now, compared to only a fourth of the acreage back in 04. That's in the severe counties that are considered severe infested. You see the percent of acres in strip till production has gone down to over 80%, now down to less than 50. And if you look at the bottom three lines in those severe counties, you see that they've about a quarter of those acres now are using, gotten away from the glyphosate, going to the Ignite-based program. And you see 20% of acres cultivated, 45% hand-weeded. Stanley, I think you said the hand-weeding anywhere from $10 to maybe $75 an acre or more. And on average, about $20-$25, I believe is what you said, farmers are having to spend. If they need weeding done, it can be expensive. And it does make a difference in cost of production, and it does make a difference in the crop that you decide to grow. Okay, I've got to move on because George is keeping track of my time here. I see the clock moving. This is an example of what a herbicide program would have looked like prior to resistance. No resistance out there. Farmers weren't concerned about it. We're growing Roundup Ready cotton. It's about a $25 an acre program. Now, you do see that we do use Prowl and Dual in this system, even though it's a Roundup Ready program. We've always had problems in Georgia with Morning Glory and Spider Wart, so we've had to, even in a Roundup Ready-based program, we've had to use these other chemistries. So this is about a $25 an acre program. Once you've got resistance, and the strategy then is to try to slow it down, to try to delay it from becoming a big problem, from try to keep it from your farm. Try to delay it. And this is a typical program based on Stanley's recommendations. Again, it's not all possible programs, but it's an example, typical program that you might find. And you can see we're Prowl pre, coming back post over the top with glyphosate and staple added in, then coming back with diuron or Direx with the glyphosate post directed. And that's about a $30-$35 an acre program. So you've gone from a $25 program now to a $30 to $35 program. Well, let's talk about 2010 very quickly. I've got a couple of minutes here.
Oh, actually, you've got, you're fine.
Oh, good. Okay, I'll slow down. Stanley knows never to give me more time, right? He's about there. He's about there scratching his head. Oh, hell, they gave Don more time. I'll slow down and catch my breath then. This is just a simple schematic on what our technology choices are for 010. We're going from a single gene BT cotton. What do we do? Well, again, if you're fortunate enough to have purchased some of the remaining single gene BT cotton in company stocks, then you're fortunate enough to have that, or you have it. Whether you're fortunate enough or not is up to you. I assume you're fortunate, otherwise you wouldn't have bought it. But you've got the single gene that you can still plant. Otherwise, you're going to have to switch to a non-BT cotton, which is conventional, Roundup Ready or Roundup Flex or Liberty Link. Or you go to a two gene, and most of these two genes, as you see, are stacked, straight B2 or a B2 with Roundup Ready, a B2 with Flex, and then you've got the Liberty Link with Bogard 2, and then you've got a straight wide strike. The wide strike, this is the Ignite based program. You've got a wide strike cotton and then wide strike stacked with either Roundup or Roundup Flex. So those are the two gene systems that we have. This is an example, and again, I want to reiterate, this is not the only horse in the race. This is just an example, something that we consider to be typical, just to have something to show as an example. But this is an example herbicide program, again, based on Stanley's recommendations, that that is set up to manage resistance. Once it's there, once it's on your farm, once it's in your field, what do you do? And we find it necessary to delineate this out by both conventional and then conservation tillage. In Georgia, our main conservation tillage is what we call strip till. I'm sure you have something very similar, but we're basically coming through and cutting a 7 to 9 inch strip, ripping under the row, and then planting in that strip, and everything else is in the field, in between those strips is not messed with. Typically, you have a cover crop out there, rye, wheat, cover, whatever. But this is an example of what might be a program to manage resistance once you've got it in a Roundup ready cotton. We don't distinguish between Roundup or Roundup Flex. We've got the same applications in here, whether it's Roundup or Roundup with Flex technology. The recommendations are the same. Roundup Flex does give the grower additional flexibility, obviously, and management and timing. But in terms of the actual applications and so forth, we don't make any distinction here. So this is kind of a typical program that you might see on our farms in a Roundup Ready cotton for managing resistance. This is a similar program on our farms managing resistance with the Ignite herbicide. The Ignite herbicide is used in the Liberty Link technology, and again we'll discuss a caveat to that here in just a second. But again, we set this out by conventional and strip till, and really, if you compare this slide with the previous one, really the only major difference there is that rather than using Roundup, we're using Ignite. Rather than using glyphosate, we're using the Ignite herbicide. Other than that, the use of other residuals and other chemistries in here is essentially about the same. All we've done is substitute one for the other. The Ignite herbicide is a more expensive herbicide based on the prices that we gather every year. Ignite is more expensive than Roundup and certainly more expensive than the generic glyphosates. But although that is more expensive that way, the overall system is offset somewhat by the fact that the technology fees are a little less and the seed costs are a little less. So there's a little bit of an offset there. But the Ignite herbicide in and of itself is more expensive. But that's basically the only difference between the systems. Well, this is a comparison, my last several slides here. This is a comparison of how the cost stack up. And I want to make one comment about the wide stripe column there, the straight W. And I want you to see that it's in red, and I want you to see that I've got a footnote in red. One of the two gene options that are available, and we feel like farmers in Georgia are already doing this, is to plant straight wide stripe, but then use an Ignite system on it. Dow and Bayer do not endorse this, and UGA flat out does not recommend it. But it is being done, and there's no doubt that farmers that are growing wide stripe, this is what they're doing. But Dow and Bayer don't endorse it, and UGA doesn't recommend it. But I'm showing it. So again, just because it is one of the options that are out there, but I want you to understand that UGA is not recommending this in any way. One of the things that I think you'll see And we'll come back to this on the conclusions. There's really very little difference in the cost at the bottom. These are what we call systems cost. In other words, this is obviously not the total cost, but it's the costs that are going to change simply as a result of the farmer making a choice, making a decision about what kind of cotton, what kind of technology to use. Okay? It's what we call just the systems cost. Everything else is going to be the same. You're going to fertilize it the same. You're going to defoliate the same. I mean, everything else is the same. So we just look at just those costs that are affected by this decision of what variety and what technology to go with. These are what we call systems costs, and you can compare the bottom lines here. You can see that for the most part, with the exception of that wide stripe there, with the caveats that I mentioned, really the costs are not that different. Is there a difference in cost? Yeah, sure. Is it significant? No. But there is a difference in cost, but it's really not that great. The same thing if you look at strip till. You can see we've got the seed and technology fees, herbicide costs. And again, this is based on the programs that I just showed y'all for managing resistance, both in conventional and strip-till. And this is the average of irrigated and non-irrigated production. Okay? Average of both irrigated and non-irrigated. And again, you can see some difference in the cost, but really not that significant. Well, let me summarize here. Due to Palmer amaranth resistance to glyphosate, our cost per acre is more than double. That program that used that weed control program that used to be a $25 an acre program is now a $50 to $60 an acre program. In 2010, we're going to lose the single gene technology. We got to shift to other varieties and other technologies, and we got to continue to manage resistance at the same time. Stanley has done a remarkable job and has worked really hard to out in the state to really look at these different programs and to educate our growers and county agents. We're trying to, the emphasis has been, Stanley, if I recall what you said, the emphasis has been on reducing the seed bank. Getting the seed population down, keep it from spreading. We're still doing research. We're doing research on things like deep tillage, heavy cover crops, and I'm talking about a wheat or rye cover crop that'd be 5 or 6 feet high and coming in with a roller and laying it down. And we're not taking anything off. It's this high. We're coming in and laying it down, and then planting, cutting or stripping and planting right into it. And so these weed control programs that I showed you there and things like plowing and cover crops are things that we're trying to do to reduce the seed bank and keep it from spreading and keep it from getting worse. There are differences in cost as was shown there, but those differences are relatively small. Those differences in cost, although they're there, are small enough to easily be offset by any difference in yield. So in my opinion, although the cost differences are there, when a grower makes a decision and makes a choice about what to plant, what to grow, yield is far from being out of the question. It's still a, if not the, major driver. Because those cost differences, although they're there, can easily be offset by yield potential. So yield is still an important factor, as much or more so than the technology itself. Key factors as we look ahead to 2010, again, as I said, yield and the farm's specific weed control goals. This is my email, phone number, and a couple of websites. If you would like a copy of this presentation or a copy of the paper even before it comes out in the proceedings, if you'd like a copy, and we're going to continue to work on this and put it in our research extension report as well. So this may not be the final product that we come up with, but it's a start that we wanted to present here at the Beltwide. But if you want to contact me, that's my information there. And I'll be happy to talk to you as well as give you any this as well as any other information that you see. And although my good buddy John Robinson back there doesn't like this, him being from A&M, if you're not aware, and I see a few other A&M folks in here as well, even though they don't like it, thank you very much. There's Uga. Okay, thank you.
Time for a couple of questions.
Anybody have a question? John?
I'm just curious, specifically a switch from one variety, do you anticipate, I'm sorry to speculate, but do you anticipate any issues related to, you know, seed suppliers bringing in enough seeds of the new alternatives and cotton acres maybe a little higher? So
yeah.
Is that going to determine the influence?
I'm not in a position to speak for the seed companies in terms of what's available out there. But something related to that, I will say that, and Stanley, I think, will agree with this, a year or two ago, we were quite concerned about the availability of high-yielding replacements for 555, regardless of what company that would come from. But the newer varieties that have come along the last year or two, and many of those have been in our OVTs, we're less concerned on the yield side about having to make this switch. Availability, I'm not really sure. Any other quick question? Okay, George, thank
Thanks.
You.
Eaton Lambert.